Welcome to another edition of Your Economic Forum entitled Money Matters. My name is Mark Cuniberti. The 286th edition into the summer we go. Before we begin, please be advised discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge. This station is staff members or underwriters. Money Matters is about money. As money does matter, and matters of money affects all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. It controls our economy, our country, our planet, and in some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. Thank you, and welcome again. Politics never seem to end. Crazy. But, hey, there we go. You know. So, let's take a look at the indexes, as we do in every show. And, where are we? Well, the Dow is now sitting at 26,575. And all-time high is somewhere around 26,919. All-time low would be when it opened centuries ago, century and a half or so, at zero. 26,575. So these large numbers above it and below it are support and resistance level. 26,575, the largest number above it would be 27,000. We regard that as resistance. Resistance means it might stumble trying to get above that. And support would be 26,000 below us. These large numbers are resistance and support. The ones above us are entitled to support level, resistance levels. And the 26,000 below us is, regarded as support. Support. Now, there are a lot of minor technical areas, levels in these numbers that analysts will look at to say, well, there's minor support and minor resistance at these particular levels. But it's pretty much agreed that if the technical analysts look at numbers, as far as big numbers on the Dow, it would be 27,000 above and 26,000 below. Below being support, above being resistance. For those watching, the NASDAQ sitting at 7,998, almost at 8,000. So that would be a major number, wouldn't it? 7,998? That would be 8,000 would be resistance level. We'll see if it punches through that today. And below it would be 7,000. That would be a support level. And, of course, many other levels there. It's interesting, if you want to take a look at how they might look at these support and resistance levels, let's say you scroll up a Dow chart. Yahoo Finance is a place where I go. And you'll see the Dow. As soon as you go to Yahoo Finance, you'll see a number that says Dow 30, and it'll say 26,000-something. If you put your cursor on the Dow 30, on the word, the Dow 30, it'll show you a chart of today. And then above the chart, you'll see 1 day, 5 days, 1 month, 6 month, year-to-date, 1 year, 5 years, and max. Okay, so if I go to max, it goes back to 85. If you go to 5 years, it goes back 5 years. So if we go back 5 years, it takes us back to April 28th on the chart. Far back as it goes, April 21st, because that's what close to today that the chart is there. And the Dow was sitting at 16,512 in April of 2014. And it never really kind of got any lower than that. It got 16,093 on January 18th of 16. A little blip there, so a little disturbance. And it got as high as, let's see here, the high in early 18, January 22nd was 26,616, very close to where it is now. But I believe it got a little bit higher. Got as high as... should be 26,009, but on my chart, I can't quite... There it is. Oop. These smaller charts are really hard to peg as far as the number, but I think I saw 26,919. Anyway, so if you want to define these levels yourself, you kind of look at a chart, maybe go back a year or so. Let's punch on a year. And you try to find out where the Dow has kind of risen and then not been able to go above it for a while. So support level. So one of those levels was the 26,000 level. That was back in February 25th of 2019. And if you want to find out support levels, those are resistance levels above us. Support levels would be the places where the Dow has kind of fallen and kind of stopped. So I can see from this chart one of the support levels, a minor support level, might be 25,450. That might be regarded as one. There's no real clear ones before that for a while. Maybe you go to 6 months. 6 months is kind of a mess, really. 6 month back chart. So any case, the low during December 24th, day before Christmas, the culmination, the capitulation event, the Dow hit 21,792, and it has been almost with an upward bias, with one particular day, January 3rd, 19th, where it dropped quite a bit. Dropped what? About 600 points in one day, and then it was just off to the races. It's gone. So again, nobody can actually predict market movements in one direction or the other, but people think they can, and the technicians will take a look at these numbers and see. Phone numbers in the booth here, 530-265-9555, 530-265-9555. If you have questions, Money Matters is about you, of course. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet in some way or another. Controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and the livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. So the show is here to educate, and we do have a slight version of Money Matters, which is Community Matters. Community Matters is where we profile nonprofits and events and things happening around the county. And every once in a while, we'll dedicate a show to that. We'll host maybe Big Brothers or the Center for the Arts, or you know, an event coming up, or sometimes even interview people that are running for public office. Because the show is not always about investing in money, because a lot of people don't have that. Indeed, I heard yesterday, one of the stats out yesterday from Martin Weiss's website was that 40% of baby boomers, not 40% of retirees, but 40% of baby boomers have zero in retirement. Zero. Ouch. And so then it said 80% of baby boomers' retirement have less than 100,000 in retirement. And so the estimate from the Martin Weiss website is that they will be living on $20,000 a year when they retire, or if they already have. 20% have more than that. So there is a retirement crisis. It is just, I don't know if the idea of Social Security has morphed into people thinking it is the only source you need. It was established as a supplemental source, but maybe over the years or decades that people have thought, well, it's Social Security, I'll retire on that. And it's really not a lot of money. You know, I see a lot of Social Security statements, being a financial advisor representative. And normally I see, when I ask people, what are you going to get when you retire? And I'm looking, usually talking to people that are between 50 and 64, when we talk about retirement, so 65 or 70 maybe, but those that are due Social Security payments and those that are getting them, I usually see on the low side around $900 a month, depending on how much you put in. On the high side, about $2,600. That's about the high as I've seen. With the majority of people coming in that I've talked to around $1,500 and $1,700. So obviously that would be very difficult to live on. But, you know, the burn rate of people, burn rate being how much people live off of. I always ask, how much do you make? And then I ask, you know, what's your burn rate? And the burn rate being how much do you spend a month? And on the low side, just to kind of comparatively see where you fall, on the low side, I'm seeing people usually will say they can live off $1,500 to $2,000 a month. On the high side, I've seen people burn through as much as $10,000 to $12,000 a month. Those usually with kids and other things. So somewhere in the range. The average burn rate that I see a lot in the area of $1,500 to $3,000 a month that they burn. I do see quite a few between $3,500 and $5,500, somewhere in there. So just kind of comparatively find out where you sit. And as far as the amount that people have in retirement, obviously if they're seeking a financial advisor representative such as myself, they have something. So, you know, I rarely see anybody come to me that doesn't have anything. I do get some calls saying, I don't have any money. How do I start? And, of course, somebody had called in a couple of shows ago asking me to do a show for people that have no money. And that was an excellent suggestion. We've done shows like that before. And so I am going to plan to see if I can do the next show on that for those that don't have investable funds, living hand to mouth, or however you want to say it, which is about half the population now. So I will do that, and I have some pretty good tips there on what to do. And so, but the average person that I see that comes in, you know, high side, couple of mil, maybe more, retirement funds. There are people that have more. I just don't see a lot of them. On the low side, usually, you know, if they could usually come to an advisor, they usually have between 50 and 100 was where they start coming in. And I would say that the majority of accounts that I see, you know, under 300. But, you know, there are some that are higher, 500, 800, a million, more than a mil. So, you know, as the accounts get larger, there's fewer and fewer people, hence the concentration of wealth at the top, right? And that kind of goes along with what we're all seeing. And so, you know, how does one start, you know, as we're coming into summer, hence the title of the show, coming into summer, sure had a lot of rain. And, of course, the markets had a tremendous setback in October, starting around October 1st and culminating December 24th, New Year's Eve, in a 600-point, four-hour shortened day sell-off. And so where do people start? And what's the good news in all this is that the magic of compounding works amazing results. It does. You know, save a couple hundred a month starting at age 20 and continue to save that and invest that historically in the markets. If you base it on historical precedents about how much the market gains, a couple hundred a month can amount to much more than I see most people have. But it's hard when you're 20 years old, 25 years old to start saving. It's really hard. But I think everybody could put away 200 a month. That'd be 2,400 a year, right? And so 2,400 a year compounding would be in a decade, I don't know, 30,000 or so. And two decades, you know, 70-something, and three decades would be 100 and something, you know, it grows exponentially as it compounds. So the number one suggestion would be no matter what you save, save something because it'll supplement your Social Security. So if you're due to get $1,500 a month from Social Security and you've saved something, maybe you'll get $600 a month from your savings retirement and that might be $2,100 a month. You know, I think one of the damage is done by some of these ads that used to air. You know, the ads used to air. And it's funny, you'll see investment advisor ads on things that attract people with money. For instance, pro tennis and pro golf. If you watch those on any golf channel or tennis channel or indeed on a network TV, you will see a lot of advisory ads. Because I guess they figured people that play tennis and play golf, for sure. Golf is extremely expensive and takes a lot of time to play a game. So they would advertise there. But one of the damages I think that I've seen in past ads, they don't air these anymore. Don't remember. I think I do remember the advisory firm that would, broker-dealer that would advertise, but I'm not going to say it. But they would say, what's your number? You know, what's your number? And through the screen, as the ad ran, you'd see floating numbers of, you know, usually in the hundreds of thousands. And it would say, what's your number? And you'd see a number, 282,176 float by, and 486,000, you know, 349 float by, and 871,000, you know, these arbitrary large numbers. And I guess the ad was targeted to make people think, how much money do you have? And maybe it was targeted to make you feel like you didn't have enough, and that you should start saving it with one of these firms. But also what it did, and it kind of gave me a direction on a show on what to do with people that don't have any money, because I have done a few shows on that before. And one of the shows was called A Hope for Retirement, and that was aimed specifically at people that did not have a tremendous amount of funds. And the word hope was in the title, A Hope for Retirement. Because in some methodology of what I put forth in the show, the technique on what I put forth in the show was that you need a lot less than what you think you need. And then doing away with the number. Because the number, you know, people will come to me and say, well, I need, you know, I've been told that I need $280,000 to retire. And indeed, most of the media you see out there would say $280,000 is not enough. So what happened is that people that didn't have a lot of money or people that don't have a lot of money would look at that number and say, well, I've got $1,800 in my bank account. I'm never going to get to $282,176.21, so why try? So I think that large number discouraged a lot of people. So I'm glad the ad is gone, because in my shows called New Hope for Retirement, it did away with that number, you know, because no matter how much money you have, it's only conducive if you're going to spend it all in one lump sum, really. I mean, what you're really looking at is how much money will I need once a month to live comfortably. And that's the way we try to establish a savings plan, a retirement plan, is based on what your monthly number is. Not you've got to save $450,000 before you retire, because who's going to do that? I mean, people are going to throw their hands up and say, forget it. I'm going to just buy a new car and have a good time and go party. I'm never going to get there, and I'll worry about it later, which is really not, you know, wise, but, you know, the human mind tends to do that. If it sees a hopeless situation, it says, what the blank, you know? So the New Hope for Retirement, and I will resurrect that show as a request from a listener that phoned in. That you don't want to look at that. You want to look at your monthly number. What do you need? You know, I know some of you maybe have real estate, a house. That's all you have, but you have your house. And, you know, when the kids move, you sell the house and you're allowed a tax exemption. One-time tax exemption for selling your primary residence. Check with your CPA, of course, for all tax advice and requirements and rules. We're not allowed to give tax advice. But sell your house, you know, nowadays, the price of housing, you might walk out with $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000. And in certain situations, tax-free, and there's your retirement. You just got to find a place to live and rent an apartment. Then you've reduced your lump sum down into a monthly expenditure. You know, why have $700,000 tied up in your house when you can pull that out, move to an apartment or a small house or wherever you want to move? And you know, make the $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 work for you and generate income. Add that income to Social Security, and maybe you haven't have another part-time job or a part-time hobby that might yield some revenue. Put all those three together and you might be able to live quite comfortably even though you don't think you have anything. Even if you don't have a residence. You know, there are things you can do to structure so you can possibly, you know, double the income that you get from Social Security. And yeah, I think that those advertisements that had those big numbers was very discouraging. And I personally know a lot of people that say, why save? I'm never going to have enough. Well, that's not quite true. And hopefully when I do this show, hopefully in 2 weeks, then we will give you some light. And I'll advertise it, you know, very well on social media and through the newsletter. By the way, the newsletter you can subscribe to shows about all upcoming shows. It's a non-cost website. Everything is free on the site. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to the radio station. And that website is moneymanagementradio.com, moneymanagementradio.com, and you'll see newsletters and things about the market come out on occasion. When the market really rocks and roll, really rock and rolls, I post more. And so, yeah, you can check that out. It also should tell you when the shows are and what's coming up on the shows. It's got some videos and interviews in there as well. MoneyManagementRadio.com. So you're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. My name's Mark, and we'll be take a short interlude, musical interlude, and be right back. Tune to Money Matters on your community radio station. Thanks for listening. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Carried on dozens of radio stations at different times throughout our lovely country. So the Dow is sitting at 26,601, up 151 points today. NASDAQ is down a point. Russell is down a point. The S&P is up 7 points. When we look at these markets, they're just different supermarkets. So the Dow is in, it was one market where there's stocks sold, and then the Russell is another market where other stocks are sold, and then the NASDAQ is another market, and the S&P 500 is another market. So if you want to look at a particular stock, and if you know, it doesn't really matter to the average investor what market it's on, but you know, they'll say, well, this is Jack's Saw Shop Incorporated, and it's listed on the NASDAQ, and that's what you're looking for. It. Basically, if you just plug in a plug in a symbol, it'll give you the stock. So for instance, I'm plugging two symbols here, and it says, I plugged in ZM, Zoom Video Communications. Oh, geez. Look at the thing I plugged in today. Anyway, it says right below it, NASDAQ. So I know that this is the NASDAQ. Jeez, the one I just plugged in is like, holy mackerel. Yeah, anyway, this is not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. Unbelievable. I think it, maybe it went public today. I just happened to plug in one. And, interesting. Yeah. It did go public. How about that? That's what I very just plugged in. It just went public today. Okay. What are the odds of that, huh? Okay. Anyway, so if you plug in a symbol in Yahoo Finance or whatever your stock screener is, it shows the company, and underneath it, it shows where it's sold, which what market it's sold in. So two things I want to talk about today as we come into summer. You know, summer, stocks can be or exhibit seasonality movements, but again, they are not exclusive. What that means is there are people that believe, and there is some historical precedence to back it up, not 100%, and that's the problem, that the summer is a slower time for the stock market. And that has been true in some cases, and it has not been true in other cases. The summer is when a lot of the traders take a vacation. They always say, the Wall Street traders go to the Hamptons. Okay. So the summer can be slow. We call them summer doldrums. The old adage, sell in May and go away, is another old stock market adage. It means that looking at the technique of selling stocks in May and leaving till like November could be beneficial to one's portfolio. But again, nothing is 100%, you know? It's like, I think the New England Patriots will win the Super Bowl. So I'll bet on the New England Patriots. But that's not, you don't know if that's actually going to happen. So in the summertime, it is thought that the traders go away and the stock market slows down. But there have been many summers when the stock market has seen other indications of volatility. And then in the fall, some people will believe that in the fall, the market has a tendency to get into trouble. Some of the big crashes have happened in October. And indeed, October 1st, 2018, was when our 2.5-month route started. And October 29th, of course, Black Tuesday, and then I think it was the NASDAQ fell apart in March, however, so that's not, doesn't adhere to the pattern. And then in the late winter and spring, they might call it the Santa Claus Rally, and so it can be seasonal or cyclical, but again, not 100%. So today, as we come into summer, I'll be watching the May indicator and see if things are going to get a little dicey. And we'll see. You know, there's a lot of stuff politically in the news. It just continues to rain down on us from all the news networks ever since November of 2016. It has just been a plethora of political upheaval, for sure. It hasn't seemed to bother the markets much. You know, November of 2016, the Dow at least sat at 17,000-something. Today, sitting at 26,000-something. So, you know, what does that tell you? You can't tell. You know, I had some people that were convinced if a certain person got elected that they'd pull out of the market, and some did and some didn't, and that the market was going to go to heck in a handbasket, and it didn't. So it's really hard to tell. Sometimes they say, buy the rumor, sell the news. That's another one. Buy the rumor, sell the news. That means is that a particular company might say, wow, they're doing real good. That's a rumor. And the stock will run. And then they'll post earnings that they did real good. And the stock will fall. And that adheres to the adage, buy the rumor, sell the news. That happens. The rumor comes out, people buy the stock on the rumor, and when the good news does come out, they sell it. It has happened. It also is said that the markets climb a wall of worry. You know? What that means is that there are contrary indicators. Contrary indicators meaning that when everybody thinks the stock market will rise, and it's all over the front of major news articles that the stock market is in a new paradigm and it will continue to rise. There are some believe that that's a contrary news, that that's the time to sell. And the theory being there's no one else to buy. When everybody believes the market will go up, everybody has already bought and there's no new buyers. So when they say that the market climbs a wall of worry, it means that if people are worried that the market will crash, that can be conducive, can be, maybe, possibly be, conducive to the market continuing to run. Because it means that some people are worried. And when you're worried, some people may not have all their money in the market. So the market calls climbs a wall of worry. So we're going to talk about annuities, and I am required in writing to Put forth the disclaimer. In writing, I have to put it in bold. Okay, since this is an audio, I have to emphasize the disclaimer. Okay, so I'm going to emphasize the disclaimer. And just imagine, if you're reading this, it's in bold. So I will raise my voice and say, investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risk, fees, and expenses before investing. For this and other important information, please obtain the investment company fund prospectus and disclosure documents from your rep advisor. Read this carefully before investing. Guarantees are based on the claims providing ability of the issuing insurance company. Okay? That's the disclaimer. On top of this, I must read that, emphasize it when we talk about annuities. Okay. So I wasn't a big fan of annuities for the longest time. I saw too many of them with high fees, complicated terms, and so many hooks I had to get out my tackle box to house them all. Now, I will say that this was AdView approved, word for word, 232089 was my approval to cover this. So that said, when I started offering annuities to clients with specific needs and desires not too long ago, I had reviewed literally hundreds of them. And in the pile, I found a few I thought advantageous. Now, I will tell you, I can say that, comfortably say, in my opinion, that most were very complicated on how they worked. And if it's complicated, I have a hard time explaining it to a potential investor and on the air here. So I will repeat, I found a few that I thought had some advantages. One of the advantages, in my opinion, is that they were simple to understand. I mean, I've seen some that were like, well, we have a fixed account and this account and this account and this percentage goes here. And I was like, whoa, how am I going to explain that to a client? First off, what is an annuity? Well, it's a contract between an insurance company and an investor that stipulates in return for some money paid by the client, you, the company will promise payments over a period of time. Or, in a different type of annuity, will pay you in a lump sum at the conclusion of the contract. Okay? Annuities have all sorts of versions and terms, but just know the contract, the annuity, is a promise to pay in exchange for your money. You give them money, they promise to pay you. Contract, written contract. How they pay you, when they pay you, and how much they pay you depends on the contract. Like a mortgage, right? Mortgages are different. The promise is as good as the company making the promise. So realize they are not guaranteed by the U.S. government in any way, shape, or form. So an annuity is not guaranteed by the U.S. government. It's only guaranteed by the insurance company. A, B, C, D, E, F insurance conglomerate company. Or whatever it is. You can pay the company a lump sum of money in one big payment, or you can pay them over time. The annuity can be tied to a moving target, such as a stock index, or it could just be a fixed rate of return. So, in other words, what they can do is they could say, okay, we're going to tie your money literally or as representative by their management to a stock market, maybe an index, maybe a Dow, maybe the S&P, maybe the Russell, maybe the whatever, okay? So they can say, we're going to base on how much money we pay you tied to this underlying stock index. Okay. Now, the indexes cannot be invested in directly. So they're just telling you that we're going to track it. Okay. It can be a fixed rate of return. Now, you know, 20 years ago when the interest rates were higher, the potential fixed rate of return was likely higher. So if you bought an annuity, for instance, 20 years ago, it's possible they may have promised you 3 or 4% annually for the rest of your life or the life of the contract. So remember, these things can vary a lot. So you're going to make sure that you understand what you're being promised. There are other variations, and they literally come in all shapes and sizes. And believe you me, I've seen a lot of them, and they do. They're all over the board. Without getting too technical, annuities can have a tie-up period, okay? Where you, the client, has to commit leaving at least some of your money, or all of it, with the company for a specified length of time, okay? So let's talk about an annuity that might have a 7-year contract, okay? Insurance company says, you give me money, and you have to leave it with us for 7 years. Now, some of the annuity companies allow a portion of your money to be taken out at certain times. In other words, if you give them $100,000 or give them $1 million, they might say in the second year you can take out 5% a year, no penalty. Most have a hardship clause. Hardship clause is like, well, if somebody dies, then they'll work with you in getting the money back out of the contract. So they have a hardship clause. I find personally that investors who like annuities or who want an annuity or might be appropriate for annuity are, one, that want a stream of income later in life that won't go away, because some annuities will guarantee to pay you until you die. Some will pay you until you die and someone else dies. Let's say you wrap a spouse into it. Or, since the balance of annuities, if you hold them to the term, some investors can't stomach the ups and downs of markets. In other words, I don't want to see a declining balance because it upsets me. Valid point. When I see my balances decline a lot, it upsets me too. However, annuities are not for everyone, nor should they be offered up carte blanche to all investors. Okay, they're not for everybody. That's why an advisor representative has to ask and lay these things out simply. Certain investors will ask me for an annuity, and others have to be explained as how they work. I don't know of a lot of investors that actually know exactly how all of them work. It would be impossible. I don't even know that. But they do know that an annuity can be a lifetime contract where they're paid for the rest of their life. As an advisor, financial advisor representative, I am approached by annuity companies trying to get me to offer their particular version. Okay, they will invite me to lunches and invite me to conferences and say, hey, we got this annuity, we want you to sell it, and please come to our luncheon and we'll describe how it works. Honestly, I find all but a handful of annuities way too complicated for most investors, and I've said that before. They're just so complicated. Sure, I could place a complicated annuity with a client, but I myself wouldn't do that knowing the client doesn't fully understand how they operate. Truthfully, some are so complicated, I have to study them for an hour or two in order to fully understand them myself, and I'm in the business. The annuities that I lean towards are the ones that are straightforward and simple. In my mind, they are clear, and I can explain them clearly to a client. But there's usually not a whole lot that I find that are like that, in my experience. My thinking is, if I can explain an annuity to a client and they understand how it works, it will be better for all concerned, which is, it's better for me because I have a better reputation for giving something that he understands. It's better for the investor because he knows what to expect. And it's better for the insurance company writing the contract because he knows that their clients understand fully and won't be surprised by how the annuity contract will function or its payouts over a period of time. I will tell you that the regulations and the oversight on annuity products is severe. It's egregious. I mean, these guys, regulators watch annuities and people who sell them, and they look over the applications very thoroughly. I could submit an annuity application, and the regulators could come back and say, no, this person doesn't make enough, or whatever the reason would be. So it's not just up to me and the client. It's also up to the people, the regulators above me, who look at these, and even the insurance companies required to look at that and say, no, This is outside of what we're allowed to do. In other words, somebody only has $20,000. He wants to buy a $20,000 annuity and is unemployed. Well, first of all, I wouldn't sell it because his money's tied up. And the insurance company and the people above me would also say, you can't sell this. It's not appropriate. It didn't used to be that way. I mean, the annuities were kind of the black boxes of investing. So they've gotten more transparency. And that's a good thing. I agree with that. It's protection to the consumer. And it is a lot better than it was decades ago. Today, many are simple, easy to understand if someone explains it to you clearly, and they perform as promised. One, they're in the written in the contract. So they're going to perform as promised. Well, you've got a breach of contract. Problem is, you have to know all the fine print in the annuity. And there's a lot of pages to these. So if you have a good advisor, they should explain everything, even the bad, about an annuity. Because they're not appropriate for everybody. You know, there are early withdrawal fees. If you take out more than they allow you to take out, they can bang you on withdrawal fees, early fees, penalties, all sorts of things. Because remember, the insurance company is using your money, and you've promised to leave some of it or all of it with them for a period of time. So they're going to invest it appropriately for them, because they want to make money on your money. So in exchange for that, if you come back and say, oh, by the way, I want it out next year, they're going to say, well, wait a minute. You said and signed that we could keep it for 7 years, and we made an investment based on that time period. So that's why it's important that you understand, that the client understands what is being offered, that the advisor understands what he is offering, and that the insurance company understands the client that is petitioning to buy the product. All those being considered and adhered to, you can have a successful placement where the advisor is happy, he's placed his client in something that will work, performance promise, the client is happy, the advisor is happy, and the insurance company is happy. This takes an honest and straightforward conversation between the advisor and the client. And then the advisor submits the application, completed correctly, to the insurance company. So all three parties, the client who's providing the money, the advisor who's the conduit between the client and the insurance company, and the insurance company that is going to have to fulfill the contract, they all understand what is expected and what is promised. Complete all those, and that is the cornerstone of a successful annuity placement. We'll be right back. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Tuned to Money Matters on your community radio station. Into summer we go. This is show number 286. Thanks for joining me today. If you're listening to this at a different time than April 18th, 12:53 p.m. The show has been pre-recorded and aired, but it is live as we speak here. And so, yeah, annuity contracts. You know, in my particular opinion, diversification of a investment portfolio, the word investment should not be directly tied to only stock market investments. You know, in my idea of a diversification, I think owning a home or renting a home and owning a car and not having too much debt and perhaps having a vegetable garden and your health and going to the gym are all investments, because an investment benefits a person. Now, an investment people think might benefit in a person monetarily, but you can invest in your body by going to the gym and eating well and not abusing it with drugs or alcohol. And you can invest in your house by painting it and keeping it in good shape, and invest in your car by changing the oil. Invest in your mind by learning and reading books and listening to positive, affirming videotapes and spiritual tapes or whatever your particular belief is. And monetary investments can run the gamut from stock market investments to bonds to mixing that in with an annuity or two to savings, CDs, U.S. Treasuries. Maybe if you like your local organic store, caring, you know, be like people like to help out their local entities with some of their funds, philanthropy, volunteering, all of that is investing. And it's one of the reasons we had a portion of the show called Community Matters, because community does matter. And it can also be a double meaning. Community matters means the matters of the community. So you could also say the matters of the community matter, because if you strengthen the community around you, you strengthen your environment. And so by strengthening your environment, you strengthen yourself. And your environment could be, well, I'm going to do things to strengthen the environment, improve the environment in my room by cleaning my room or in my house or on my property or in my block or in my city or in the state or in my nation or indeed the globe. You know, we're all part of the community on the planet. So normally when we talk about investing in community, at least on this show, we're talking about a general area in your whatever county you live in. And we may talk about things that exist in the county that I'm in. But when the show is broadcast in Peoria, Illinois, or down in L.A. or something like that, we're talking about them investing in the community down there. So we also do talk about global investing being, well, let's, you know, all try to use sustainable resources and renewable energy and things of that sort. That helps the planet, right? Because what we do to our air helps, you know, affects the air around the world eventually. So investing can cover a lot more. And as far as monetarily concerned, I believe a mix of stocks and bonds and annuity and savings and even some people might regard precious metals, real estate. It's a whole lot of things where, in my opinion, the money should be spread out. I do not believe that somebody should be completely invested in the stock market. I just don't believe that. My opinion. Others may. I also don't believe that an investment of stocks and bonds is complete. My opinion. You know? Everybody has a different opinion, right? Okay, you have been listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Remember, the discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. They are my opinions, right? Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Indices I may have mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station, its staff members, or underwriters. Our website is free. It is moneymanagementradio.com, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. It has been a pleasure serving you today. God bless. Go make some money and take it easy on yourself. My name is Mark. Have a great day.